Matthews gets it back to the point. Kept in there nicely. And a centering pass. Matthews scores! 67! Comes to Domi. Looks for a pass in front. They score! Matthews again! Holy mackerel! Never mind. 67. We can forget about that. 68.
He's too good. You don't have to force it. Force a little in a game that doesn't matter. Brent Gunning, Jesse Rubinoff here, Fan Morning Show. And joining us now, we'll just bring him right in, Sam McKee. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Joining us now on the line, the third member of this trio that deserves the, well, we don't have precedence, but the Primeministerial Medal of Freedom for working through a master's round right now is Sam McKee. Sammy, how's it going, bud?
Gunner, good. Rubes, good.
What's up, buddy?
Didn't expect Rubes this morning. A nice, pleasant surprise.
Let's just say you're not the only one that didn't expect Rubes this morning. Might have had a little kerfuffle that happened scheduling wise.
Slight mix up.
Well, it's okay though.
Oh, it's okay. We're all good here.
Of course.
Yeah. I was supposed to play golf with Rubes on Wednesday.
I was too.
It was the nicest day of the year
of all time.
Boys, I have been. I don't know what got me. I got something. I got the Masters flu, boys. Like, I'm sure there's going to be a ton of people that have some question marks about missing Neil Kiprembourn on the first day of the Masters. And that's fair. You can have those question marks. But know in your heart, I have been the sickest man of all time. Like, I thought it was going to be on the Wednesday. I'm like, boy, it's going to be a tough break dying on Wednesday, on Masters Wednesday. can it happen on the Monday after, please? But I'm happy to talk. The first words I've spoken since basically Wednesday. So I'm happy to see you. Happy to talk to you guys.
I knew when you canceled that something was up.
If it wasn't I guess the three of us and Ailish were all supposed to play golf together on Wednesday. If it wasn't for the canceled round, there's no way I would believe you. It's just all-time bad break for you because, you know, I know, like, I believe you. You're a man of honor, and I know you're sick, but there's no – you could not pinpoint a day of the year more likely for you to have taken a fake sick day. Like, you genuinely could not have. It's coming off the nicest day of all time, and it's the start of the Masters. It really is. Like, it's just tough for your brand for anyone to believe you. I do, but it's just so hard.
And for anyone listening to the show who's a fan of the Masters, Tiger's a long one for par here, coming off a horrible chunked shot. The putt is on the way. It's rolling. It's rolling towards the cup. It's short. Tiger Woods moves back to even par for the day.
I enjoyed that, but I don't. I feel like there's some CRTC stuff at play.
Maybe
that's the last, show. You guys the last one of those. Maybe if you want to. If you want to text me that between the hours of 9 and 10 o'clock when I'm driving to my house, very here for it. I feel like the CRTC would have some other things. All right, Leafs, whatever. We'll talk about that in a sec. Masters, golf show. Yeah. We did our preview pod. We'll have another one coming up after the tournament's done. What was your big takeaway? You're just loving your big, sexy Bryson back at the top. You love seeing Tiger alive. Well, what was the thing most warming your heart after your fake sick day on Masters Thursday?
I really enjoyed watching the first round. I forget every year how much I love this tournament. Like, I love it. I love it. And then I just, every year, the leaderboard's great. And it's just, it's such great action and all the holes. And it's just the great thing about having a major at the same course every year. You just have all the familiarity. It's the best. But I would say my big takeaway is watching Scottie Scheffler very closely. I don't even think he played that well. And he shot 65. Like, was it 65 he shot? He was 6 under, right?
Yeah.
Or it was 66?
66, so, yeah.
The putter's still, like, there was still three or four putts that were of, you know, I would say, you know, 15, 10, 20 feet that, like, are makeable putts that he's still making. The reason that he's hitting them, the reason he's making so many birdies is he's just hitting them to arm's length. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy how dialed in he is. And the fact that he is probably going to win this thing, and he's not really putting very well, it's amazing. It just shows how good the rest of it is. And, of course, Bryson. But I honestly don't even want to talk about Bryson because I didn't take him in any pool. I didn't put $1 on him, and I'm sick I didn't. The thought crossed my mind, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And I should have known because he's been playing really well on Live Tour. So it's a tough one for me to see the big golfer do that and me not have any money on him. But my big takeaway is that Scottie Scheffler is unbelievable, and he's probably going to win, and he's not even putting very well.
Yeah, well, he's putting better than Hideki Matsuyama, who I just loaded up on in all my pools, and it's just an absolute disaster. But yeah, we were talking.
He was a sexy pick.
He was a sexy pick. Great form. The only one who really rivaled Scotty in terms of form coming into the tournament and just could not putt at all. Looked like me, little miss 4-footer, miss 7-footer, just could not find it. But we were talking about it earlier. Like, Scotty, I think at this juncture, he doesn't clearly have the major pedigree that Tiger had in his prime, but he's the closest thing I think that we've seen, just his ability to week in, week out, be the guy that is going to be there on the first page of the leaderboard, like, no matter what. It's crazy.
To me, it's not about, like, the word is inevitability.
Yeah.
That you know at some point throughout this golf tournament, he will be in the, you know, on the first page or at the top of the first page. And that's, you know, he's 4-1.
Yeah.
That's why I bet a lot of money on him at 4-1, because it's like, you know what? You bet on you gamble to have the sweat. And I know on Sunday, I'm going to be in the tournament with Scottie Scheffler, unless his wife has a baby and then it's a nightmare. And then I'm like, why did I bet all that money on him? But like, there's just, you know that he's going to be in the fight. You know that you're going to have something with Scottie Scheffler. And lo and behold, he goes out there and shoots a 66 and he's second to Bryson. It's just, I like the Tiger comparison. There couldn't be two more opposite guys in terms of their, like, mindset, in terms of their, like, you know, off the court interesting or off the course
that we know. That we know, McKee.
Well, yeah, I just Scotty.
Could you imagine?
Like, as crazy as it was with Tiger, it would be way crazier with Scotty.
That would rival the Ohtani story.
Way more
surprising. Just found out that Scotty Scheffler was Tiger Woods in all those ways. That would actually rival the Ohtani story.
Yeah, you know, I'm technically I did steal from him. It's all over for me.
I can't believe that happened.
Anyways, so yeah, Scotty Scheffler, really good, big takeaway. Tough day for our boy Nick Taylor, +5. His major championship resume continues to take a bit of a hit. Wasn't good yesterday. Love to see Connors have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Weirzy with a couple shots on the broadcast. That was great. Big chip in. Nice 5 medal to about 10 feet on 13 for an eagle putt. I don't know if he made it. Probably made a birdie. So Nice to see the Masters back on. We're just heating up here. This leaderboard is shaping up nicely.
Yeah, I cannot wait to put a beating on my coach today, tomorrow, and
Big
Sunday.
Dog.
And tell him the verbal meme. It was so good. You got to give it to McKee.
It was me to my couch for the next 4 days with the Tiger Big Dog meme.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Very good verbal meme. Scottie Scheffler is also the heir apparent to Tiger in that he was 6-under, and it was the worst he could have shot out there. Like, that is actually how you know he's the true heir apparent. We'll have plenty more on golf. Again, you and I will have a recap pod when it's all said and done with, let's be honest, probably Scottie Scheffler wearing a nice green coat that he already owns. Anything else on that before we move on, McKee? Or you're good? You've got your Masters thoughts off your chest.
One more thought on your boy Rory.
Yeah.
Is it true that he'd never been under par in the first round? Not in any
recent vintage.
Lowest round since 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, I don't know that it had never been. I feel like he had got off to some decent starts, but it was like curly hair, Oakley, Jeremiah, Rory. That was the last time.
Best opening round since 2018 at the Masters for Rory.
Okay, don't hate that start for your boy.
No, he needed to not shoot himself in the foot, and he didn't. So,
and he's done that for 4 or 5 straight years where he's been awful.
Yeah.
And then I get to make fun of you for him being backdoor top 10 Rory,
you
where he comes in and shoots a 67 on Sunday, and it's like, oh wow, he had another top 10 at the Masters. But like that little 71 for Rory, and you know, you put something together today, you get to moving day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, I said it on the pod on Friday, that this week was feeling a little funny for me. Unless Scottie Scheffler runs away and hides, Rory is much, much very in this, buddy.
Yeah, I'm afraid to get hurt, get my hopes up. You know this, but yeah, I'd love to see it. Also, it's the most Masters leaderboard of all time. Like Bryson at the top, the guy we all expected to be there, right there. A random rookie, a former random champ, and Danny Willett. You got some Euros in there. Patrick Reed's poking around. Like, it is just. It was never going to be a bad leaderboard at the Masters, and you definitely could have concocted one that would have been sexier, but great board, hot board heading into today. Can't wait to use and abuse my couch while I watch it. So, Leafs last night. I want to start with Domi. It's the topic du jour. You know, there's other like pertinent things I suppose to take from the game. But what did you make of seeing that last night? I mean, obviously, like, we all know the lineage to his dad. His dad's in the crowd watching it. Everybody loves it. What did you, just your first blush reaction when you saw him just go nuts and jump Nemec?
Did his dad like it? Does his dad like him fighting?
I was going to say, he didn't look like, I feel like he's loved other ones. He didn't look like he loved that one, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I think probably for good reason. I mean, he jumped a 19-year-old, like, for literally nothing. So maybe he's like, Max, maybe we didn't need that one. Like, it was a minor dust-up. Listen, I love the passion, and I would never, ever fault him for it. So yeah. I love Max Domi, and it was amazing. And, like, I think, was it Luke Fox tweeted that he's literally fighting to stay on Matthew's line?
Never hit retweet so fast. He did tweet
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like, it's just, it's awesome. I love what he's doing. I love his playmaking ability. I just... You know, there's a very obvious conversation here that the Marner thing, like, how long is this going to last? Because you know that there's a guy wearing 16 that doesn't love this.
So,
and
let me pose this to you. So the way I kind of led the show today was talking about how I don't think Sheldon Keefe would have sat there saying, oh, you know, it'd be great if Domi could get like a 10-minute instigator, right, and then we have to go away from him. And I can see Mitch Marner trying to completely force feed the puck to Austin Matthews and them kind of getting out of what makes them great and kind of overlooking for it. I think it actually is kind of perfect that Keefe gets to go, there, you had your chance. You tried to force feed him. It didn't work. I gave you Nylander with Tavares. How can you be upset about that? Like, I actually think the fact that the instigator, like, it killed them in the game, quite honestly. Like, it's not the reason they lost, but it's among them. But I think that it kind of worked out well that that Keefe was forced into giving it some burn together, and they just didn't click. That's not to say it wouldn't have if you give it more time. Obviously, the two of them can connect. They have chemistry. But I think it kind of worked out perfectly that Keefe is able to now say, there, you had your chance. It didn't work. Go back to your line with the terrible John Tavares. Like, it's not like it's some demotion, you know?
Also, it's Sammy, it's like, at this stage, who cares if Marner doesn't like it? Like, that's the reality. Like, oh, seriously, who cares? It's not about Marner. Like, they need the postseason success, and you have to do what gives your team the best opportunity to win. And if that's having Matthews playing with Domi and Bertuzzi and having Marner, you know, sprinkled up and down the lineup or whatever it is, playing with whoever, maybe that all-star line, maybe not, whatever it is, if he's going to be unhappy about it, like, that's a you problem. That's not a team issue. They need to win.
I know. I get it. I'm just saying. I know that, like, the way personalities work and the way pecking orders work on teams.
For
and,
sure.
You know, guys with certain personalities, like, it can hang over stuff. So I wanted to bring it up because it's very interesting. Because Matthews clearly loves playing with Domi. Like, there is no denying it. Like, there is a real chemistry amongst those two guys. They love each other, those two guys. Like, it feels like when we're, you know, when we're all 20 years older than we are right now, we're going to be seeing Instagram stories of Max and Matthews at some palatial golf course playing together. Like, it feels like these guys are going to be best buds for the rest of their lives. So, I don't know. It's just something that's been interesting to me. But I think the Domi thing, I think the Bertuzzi thing, I think the Reeves thing, a lot of it is a good lesson for all of us in patience, boys. Because
great point.
Like, we do this every day, so you can't go on the radio and be like, patience, friends. There's nothing to be upset about. But, like, if you're a fan and you're getting bent out of shape about how bad Bertuzzi looks and how bad Domi looked to start the year and Reeves, too, and all that stuff, but, like, they're all new guys. It's a new system. They're learning to play with new guys, and they're all sort of percolating at the right time. Aside from last night, which was not the prettiest result outside of Domi's passes or whatever. But it's a lesson in patience. And I hate to say it, but I do like this team a little bit heading into the playoffs. As long as they get some saves. And last night was not a great night for that.
Yeah, they certainly didn't. Let's talk about that there. I think you have to go back to him on Saturday now. I think that was probably the way this was going to trend anyway, so that you could give him the option of kind of having the full week off if that's what you felt like you needed to do heading into the postseason. But I'm not ringing alarm bells by any means because he's been so good as of late. But I'd be lying if that didn't make me go a little cockeyed seeing that last night from Samsonov, like five on the 23 shots or whatever it ended up being. I mean, some of them you can't fault them. It's like it's a clean win off a faceoff, but there are a few you certainly can. Again, you just look at the numbers. I always go back to it. It's that behind-the-scenes series of Keith talking to the goalie coach going, I don't care. Just pick one or two of them and stop them. And that is kind of how I feel about last night's game. I don't think it opened the door for Wall by any means, but I don't know. Maybe you feel differently?
Well, the thing that upsets me, this is what kills me the most about having two goalies, mm-hmm. is that, you know, if you just had one goal, like a starting goalie, like, yep, bad night, he plays again.
Yep,
bad night, he plays again. You don't be like, every time one of these guys has a bad start, we all have to go on the radio or all have to talk to our friends or all have to be like, oh, it's obviously Wall. Oh, it's obviously Samsonov. Like, it's just when you have two starting goalies, you don't have one. It's just, it's a back and forth thing. And like, what are the chances that both of them play in the first round? Very good.
100%.
And to me, that's not what I like. I hate this conversation that we've had to have the whole year because of the inconsistencies of Samsonov, then him getting hot, then him getting hurt, Wall being hurt, Jones playing a bunch. It's just been a really up and down year where it feels like no goalie's gotten in a rhythm outside of Samsonov for the past, you know, he had about a month where he was good probably, right?
Yeah, about that, like, I'd
really
say.
Good?
Yeah, I'd put it there.
Like he's got a good record and his numbers are good, but they, you know, there was a long time this year where he was very bad. And there was still some shaky stuff when he came back that people forget about because of the really good stretch. But I hate having this conversation all the time. And I don't know if the door's open. I really don't know. I really hope that Curtis Sanford knows which one he trusts more. And they have a long, hard conversations and they figure it out. Because I ain't figuring it out. I have no idea who I think's better. I have no idea who should start game one. It's probably Samsonov. But like, if you told me it's going to be Wall, fine.
Yeah,
I really don't know.
Yeah, they're gonna,
sorry for that answer, but I'm like at my wit's end with it.
No, that's the right answer. I don't know is always the right answer when it comes to goaltending.
Yeah, they're going to be at a disadvantage, I think, no matter what. Like Samsonov has obviously been great since the turn of the calendar, but you always have the possibility of nights like last night with him, and you wonder if it spirals out of control. And you mentioned that you're high on the Leafs going into the postseason here, Sammy. Do you care about the home ice thing? Do you care who they play heading into the postseason, and obviously the infamous We Want Florida from a year ago? Do you think there's fans that are clamoring for one over the other, whether it's the Panthers or the Bruins at this stage? And do you care about the home ice?
I would prefer them not to have home ice. I don't think you stop I don't think you stop playing to not get it, because, you know, that'd be insane. Like, you don't want to, like, tank to – that's the worst look ever. But if you happen to end up without home ice, I don't think that's the worst thing at all. I think this team, didn't they have their record for wins on the road this year for the Leafs?
Yeah. Like,
I just,
yeah, 24-9 and 6. Better, yeah.
They're a way better road team, boys, and it's just the way it is. You go down to that building, you start game one, there's 30% Leaf fans in that barn. It's, you know, it's not like an intimidating spot where you're going into Boston or you're going into MSG. You're going into, you know, all these different places that really scare you as a Leaf fan. The Panthers are a really scary team, and they're good. They've been good all year. I think they've taken a bit of a dip over the last little bit. Injury troubles, whatever. Bobrovsky took a bit of a dip there. Like, you know, you could convince me that the Leafs could win against any team in the East in seven games or lose in seven games. Like, I don't really worry about who they play. Like, do you think who would you rather play if you had a choice? I know it's not possible, but would you rather play the Lightning or the Panthers?
Yeah.
I would probably take the Panthers.
I think so, but I don't know that it completely matters. To your point, it's like it's going to be a knife fight that goes six or seven games against. I mean, they're not going to get one of these wildcard teams. So outside of it being like the Penguins or the, you know, whoever's at the bottom of the Metro or whatever, then it's going to be against some tough team. I mean, even if you were like facing the Rangers or the Hurricanes, it's like, yeah, I could see the Leafs winning those series, but I could also easily kind of see them losing them. Just back to Matthews for a sec. I mean, we've all spent 100 years. I know he's only played in the league for seven of them, but we spent 100 years gushing about how great he is. When I saw the stat that he was the first guy since Solani to have 50 even strength goals, that, I don't know, it made it feel more impressive to me. Not that it's like humanly possible for a nearly 70 goal season to seem more impressive, but like you know, we're all of the same vintage. Like that Solani era of him scoring 76 goals and shooting the glove. Like it just, it seems like a different sport. Forget a different era. And the fact that Matthews is doing it, like, I know it shouldn't hammer it home anymore because he's on the verge of 70, and that in and of itself is impressive. But when I saw it, his accomplishment kind of linked to that Solani season, it hammered home how night and day all the hockey I've watched in my life is to what I'm seeing right now with this guy.
Yeah, 50 even strength goals is crazy. That's like how many?
51.
How many? sorry, boys, I'm losing her here.
Speck of dust. Finish the answer, and we'll let you go. Give us a good answer, and you
go. He wasn't lying.
No, how many, yeah, that's great. Like, how many power play goals this year does Sam Reinhart have? They have, like, 85 power play goals?
I know that Leon Draisaitl has 35 even strength goals in the last 2 years, yeah, is what I know.
That's actually the crazy thing about Matthews and his goal-scoring ability is that, he's sneaky not great on the power play.
I know.
He's never really lit it up on the power. Like, if he ever figured out how to score at, like, an Ovechkin level on the power play. And a lot of that has to do with the Leafs' options on their power play and the fact that it's never really been that great. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gets stagnant on them and the passing option. And we don't need to go over the power play issues that the Leafs have had. But it's really remarkable, the even strength 5-on-5 stuff. He dominates at 5-on-5, which to me is something that's a little bit overplayed as well in terms of like, oh, you only – like, well, it's good when you score on the power play too. Those ones count as well. Like, those matter. So I
certainly would take really a power play goal. Yeah.
Oh my God, or a penalty kill like last night. But no, it's really remarkable. And, I never thought in a million years that we were going to get to this spot. Like even 2 weeks ago when he got 60, I was like, oh, it's a little late here. 10 goals. It's going to be really hard for him to get there. And then what do you know? The guy's just scoring a goal every game. And now he got 2 goals last night. And they play against Detroit on Saturday, who bleeds goals, who he loves to score on. He owns them. Well, he owns everybody, but specifically them. And he's going to get it Saturday night. So it's going to be remarkable. I will give us a quick shout out. I know you know that I love to do shout outs.
You do.
One of my great buddies, Sean. Johnny is going on his bachelor party, and they're going to Miami for a part of it. But they're going to both the hockey games in Florida. So they're going to the back-to-back. So for my boy Shawnee's sake, I'm hoping that he doesn't get it Saturday.
It's amazing.
And that the boys can go and they can get to witness history and see the 70th goal of Austin Matthews this season in one of the two Florida games. So there you go.
There's
a little shout out for you on a Friday morning.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it last night. I thought for half a second I did. I was going to when Tavares drew that penalty late. I thought we were getting it. But since I didn't get to, and I'm selfish and I care about myself the most, but I can't have it. So let's let your boy Shawnee have it. Good luck. Thanks. Thanks, buddy. Always enjoy it.
Feel better, pal.
I'll be exploding your phone all weekend long. Just a heads up on that.
I've turned the corner, boys. I'm going to make my triumphant return to Real Kipper and Born today. I made my my return. I'm back.
All right. Love to see it. And, I love to see that show. I love my own show.
They got to wear hazmat suits.
That's right. Keep the boys healthy.
Why do I sound that bad?
Well, I mean, you did have a coughing fit 3 minutes ago where you're hold on a second. Sound like Peter King was back on the show. All right, McKee. God love you. Thanks for coming, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Bye, boys.
There he goes, off of death's door. It's like Paul Kariya. Off the floor and onto the board. Off of death's door and onto Kipper and Born. Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
I did know it was bad when he canceled on golf, because that guy never cancels on golf.
He canceled on two things. Well, I will say he likes golf way more than the other thing I'm about to mention. He already canceled doing this once this week. We were supposed to talk to him earlier, and he's like, I'm too sick. And I'm like, a likely excuse after a day off. But then, he was deathly ill. So,
I love the guy. I'm happy you're not going to see him today, but based on the on the coughing fit.
You don't want that. Everyone cares so deeply. How'd golf go with Ailish on Wednesday? Again, I was crushed. It was supposed to be the four of us. It would have been a wonderful day. All of us regaling each other with tales of average golf. How'd it go with Ailish?
I was rusty. She was incredible.
Okay.
I mean, just darts.
Not surprised.
All day long. Had one of the most pristine golf holes I've ever seen. Just a drive down the middle of the fairway, probably 80 in, put it to 5 feet, birdied. It's like, what's going on here?
Clinical, classic.
I'm just sculling it over the green.
Well, you would have had
losing
some
balls. It's just tough.
You really should have had me out there. Then you would have had some company. But yeah, we'll the four of us will have to get out at some point this year. Again, love McKee jumping on. And again, just like all of us deserve so much credit for doing our jobs this morning because the Masters is on. I don't know how much this next person cares about the Masters, but he has a love of sport, specifically the NHL. Greg Wyshynski joins us next to wrap up the week on Fan Morning Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sounds a lot like Austin Matthews right now. No stopping him. Burning through the sky. Two more goals last night. Two goals shy of 70 on the season. But most importantly to me, and Joe Bowen did reference it in one of his calls last night, after the second goal, no longer sitting on 67 goals. Now, I'm a big omen guy. I'm like a big juju guy. And if Austin Matthews ended the season sitting on 67 goals, I suppose there's a world like that'd be like some like exercising of 67 demons. But I really think it would just be the ultimate kiss of death. That probably tells you like more about me and how I view the world than actually like true things. But I just like 68 is actually more important to me than 70 almost after last night.
Well, it's hilarious because it didn't last very long.
No.
It's not like he was sitting on 67 for like 10 games and it was like, oh no,
this I don't know that it,
like, it didn't give you any time to like think about the connection, and still you're so sharp. You're just like, this
immediately.
Yeah.
Goes to panic and worry. Somebody who makes me do none of those things. It makes me feel happy and joyful to bring him onto our show, especially as the last guest of the week. Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN, also co-host of The Drop podcast with Arda Ocal. Wish, always love getting you on. As a former podcast producer of yours, always fun to get to talk to you here. How's it going, man?
I like this whole calming thing. It makes me feel like a bath bomb or something. Well, I don't know.
It's because I know I just get to ask.
I feel like I increase a lot of anxiety in people. I don't know.
It can do that, but I know I'm going to ask you questions about Austin Matthews and how he's the great American hope, and then we'll both be on the same page, despite of what he did to your Devils teams, despite them winning the game last night. You know, there's obviously been so much buzz about Matthews, and you know, some of it in the heart race, most of it surrounding the 70 goals. But do you think he has taken an extra leap in terms of like consciousness in the States? I mean, here, I didn't think it could get any bigger, and now he's on the verge of 70 goals, and boy, does it. My opinion has kind of been that he needs the team success for people in the States to kind of care, and that team doesn't have to be the Leafs. Like, I'm not blind to it being Team USA at this Four Nations Cup or at the Olympics. Like, I think that could do it for him as well. But has this second transcendent season that he's had in the last 3 years, has it kind of changed his place in the consciousness or not really yet?
I like that. I like that notion. I kind of agree with you on that one. As far as like team success being in that spotlight, being the thing that will make him more of a transcendent player in the U.S. But I gotta say that 70 goals would help too. Like, I mean, the beautiful thing about the NHL right now is that because we are in such an offensive era, you know, the American fans are, as you guys probably know, pretty simple-minded when it comes to like what they pay attention to. And what they pay attention to is giant, juicy stats and records being threatened, right? That's why when Ovechkin gets close to Gretzky, it's going to be as big for the NHL as like the Hank Aaron home run chase was for Major League Baseball, or the Rifkin record was for Major League Baseball. So, you know, I don't want to undermine the 70 goal thing, because I do think that like when those headlines hit and hey, dude has 70 goals, first guy to do it since yada, 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 it's definitely going to catch the attention of a casual sports fan. But like you said, I mean, like, heroics for Team USA in Four Nations or even more so in the Olympics, or the Leafs going on a run, would certainly resonate more.
Where do you stand with Auston Matthews in the Hart race? Because the reality is he's nowhere close in terms of points. He's almost 40 points behind Kucherov, who leads the league. But when you look at the goals, obviously he's got 14 more than Sam Reinhart and 15 more than Zach Hyman, who's third. So where does that put him for you? Because for some people, goals matter a lot more than just points and adding up the secondary assists here and there, not to take anything away from the three guys that are at the top of the points list. But I think there is something to be said for doing something that hasn't been done in over 20 years, and that's scoring 70 goals.
The secondary assist thing is such a joke. I have two Pavlovian responses to people that are bringing up stuff just to make sure that Kucherov doesn't win. The first is the secondary assist thing, as if anybody made that argument against Wayne Gretzky during any of his Hart years.
Right.
They didn't. And then the other thing is the empty net goal thing, which for me is even more painful because it reminds me of when people tried to take Ovechkin down a peg early in his career by being like, well, some of these goals were empty netters. And again, when did we ever say that about Wayne Gretzky when he was scoring goals? The answer is never. I'm kind of a Kucherov guy, in case you can't tell. I think that his impact on the Lightning is insanely big this year. The gap between him and Braden Point in the scoring race for that team is remarkable. You watch him game in and game out. The amount of things that he does offensively is remarkable. I know you can knock him for defense, and I think that Matthews probably, pound for pound, has been a better defensive player than Kucherov this year. But I'll probably get more granular with the numbers and could probably change my opinion. But at this point, I'm a Kucherov guy. I think for Matthews, Kucherov, and McDavid, and to a lesser extent Sid, although I think he could end up on a lot of ballots based on what the Penguins are doing down the stretch, is they all won before. And I hate to be like simplistic about the Hart race, but MacKinnon hasn't. And there are a lot of voters that feel like he should have in the year that Taylor Hall won. And it's going to probably be as simple as that, the awarding the guy who hasn't gotten it yet. And it's not to say he doesn't have a case, but that could ultimately be the thing that tips a lot of votes. And in the last NHL Awards Watch we did on ESPN.com, where we talked to the actual voters and get their ballots, he had 77% of the first place votes. So, it's a pretty considerable lead for MacKinnon.
How do you feel about narrative taking such a hold? The case I've kind of been making about it is I have, and this is a weird thing to say, but I have no problem with narrative taking a hold unless the narrative is this guy hasn't won one before. It's like that one I have very little time for, but all the other narratives, like if you want to say, hey, this is a tie and I can't pick any of these guys, so Sidney Crosby turning back the clock and being great at 36 or however old he is, that's good enough story for me. I actually don't have a problem with it. And I think part of it is the way we view the history of the sport. Like when we sit here and talk about hockey's Mount Rushmore, we do counting stats, we do cups. It's the fact that you were a Hart Trophy winner, but nobody knocks someone because they won two as opposed to four of those. And I think that's why for me, I actually have no problem with narrative being a thing that I don't think it should be the prevailing driving sentiment. But when in a year like this, where you have three, four, maybe for some people, five candidates that you can squint and talk yourself into, personally, me, I have no problem with narrative playing in, unless it's that ugly narrative of this guy's never won before.
Yeah, but that's ultimately going to be the narrative that separates somebody from the pack. What you end up doing sometimes when you play those mind games, and we've seen this, I think, some years at the Norris, is you end up giving, Scorsese the Oscar for the movie that isn't Raging Bull. You know what I mean? It's like it ends up being one of those situations. I don't think that's the case for MacKinnon. I think this is one of MacKinnon's finest seasons. And it just happens to be that lack of a MVP trophy on his mantle is part of a larger story. But there's a reason why this guy has been leading for most of the year, despite other people having remarkable seasons. For God's sakes, like Kucherov is the reason the Lightning are in the playoffs. McDavid resurrected the Oilers with his play after the coaching change. It's just that, if MacKinnon keeps leading and with a pretty significant edge, there has to be something more than just stats to play.
Well, how do we encapsulate what Sidney Crosby is doing with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Like just willing them into the postseason. They've won 7 of 9. The guy's got 1,000 career assists now, 40 goals again, point per game. It's just remarkable to be witnessing someone, not just, we know that Sidney Crosby is capable of doing this sort of thing, but the Penguins were dead in the water And Crosby being of the vintage that he is, like, he's getting up there in age, but it just feels like he's relentless in his pursuit of getting the Penguins into the postseason. Like, how would you describe what you're seeing from Sid right now?
Not only dead in the water, but having traded his line mate. I mean, like he did great business with Jake Guentzel for several seasons. and then all of a sudden Guentzel's in Carolina and Sid skating with like Drew O'Connor, Ryan Russ. And then lo and behold, you know, he goes on this heater towards the end of the season to try to drag them into the playoffs. I watched a lot of that game against Detroit last night. And what's pretty remarkable for Sid and the Penguins is like, not only are they trying to defeat their opponents, they're trying to defeat their themselves, basically. Like, you watch Erik Karlsson in that game last night. I think I said something on Twitter about this being the full Erik Karlsson experience, where he makes a few titanically dumb decisions that lead to Detroit goals. But then he also backchecks on a Patrick Kane breakaway to break it up. And then he scores the game-winning goal in a 3-on-3. It's like, it was the perfect encapsulation of the Erik Karlsson experience of like, you have to take the absolutely awful and then the absolutely fantastic, and they all exist in the same body and exist in the same game. And, you know, that's the sort of roller coaster that Sid's riding right now is, you know, there are times when the Penguins are getting great goaltending and they're playing well as a team. And then there are other times when he's just got to put the pedal down and make something happen or else they're going to lose the game.
Yeah, he's been remarkable. And yeah, just, I mean, we were talking narratives there for a second. Erik Karlsson, after having made a couple big gaffes, coming back to score the OT winner is just, it really is kind of picture perfect.
I think we all kind of have a gap between, well, maybe the Lightning less so, but whoever the second wildcard team is, the bottom Metro team, and then the top kind of six in the division. That's kind of how I have been looking at it. How much separation is there from, like, let's just call it the Rangers to the Lightning of those kind of top six teams in the East? How much do you think really, really kind of splits those teams apart? Because I could make a case it's really not much.
There's not much. I mean, I think the Lightning could beat anybody. I think the Penguins in a seven-game series, given if they get good goaltending and the core plays well, could beat anybody. I mean, I don't think there's a juggernaut there where if somebody took an L in the first round, you're just like, wow, I can't believe that happened. You know, maybe that's an after effect of Florida winning last year over Boston after Boston set all those regular season records for wins and points. But in the East especially, like, there's nothing that would I guess what would shock me is if Detroit or Washington qualified in the eighth seed and or in the second wild card and they won a series, because I don't think either of those teams are necessarily ones I expect to win a playoff series. But if the Penguins get in and they have the inside track right now, like if they win a first round series against, say, the Bruins or the Rangers, I guess it'd be the Rangers, I don't think anybody would be shocked. They had the Rangers against the ropes a couple years ago until Trouba knocked out Sid with that hit to the head. And so, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see them do it again.
Is there a team, when you look at the standings here, where you say to yourself, you know, I'm a little bit higher on them than most people would be? Like, the standings are so close, and it just feels like that's why always the first round is just the greatest thing potentially in all of sports. It's just absolute chaos because there's so many good teams going at it. But is there a team that maybe you think is going a little bit under the radar here that can make some noise come playoff time?
Yeah, why should we not, you know, not expand the playoffs, right? I mean, like, if the first round is the most exciting round, why not make the first round bigger and more grandiose? That's my opinion. Winnipeg is one that I think people are sleeping on because they seem to have recaptured the magic a little bit down the stretch.
Right. There
was a time earlier this season when they were the best defensive team in the league based on the metrics. You know, Hellebuck has been constantly good. They're scoring a bit more. They're finding their game again. And it's hard to believe or even imagine that Colorado was going to go out in the first round in consecutive seasons, but that's not going to be a very easy matchup for the Avalanche, and I think the Jets are starting to peak at the right time.
Yeah, I certainly see that as well. There's been a lot of squawking about playoff format, and I don't know. I feel like when I was complaining about it for the last 3 years, everyone's been telling me to pipe down. But now that it might affect, I don't know, like Boston or somebody like that, it does seem like there's quite an appetite for change. You mentioned there you'd like to see it expanded. I got to be honest, I completely disagree. I hear the arguments for it. It's just when something's good, I'm really just so allergic to change. It's like, it's good. Let's just leave it alone. Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
The problem for me in debating, you know, morons like you about this is the fact that is the fact that this is the wrong year to make the argument. I mean, the wild card race of the Eastern Conference is great, and if you expanded the playoffs to include a play-in round, if you expanded it to 10 teams in each conference and had a play-in round, the math changes. I mean, it does extend it a little bit. Like, I think Buffalo might actually have some relevance right now if we did extend it a little bit. But ultimately, we wouldn't have situations like, you know, Detroit-Pittsburgh last night, or at the end of the season, the Islanders in Pittsburgh, where that could be for a playoff spot. We wouldn't necessarily have that. So it's the wrong season to make the argument, but the right time to make the argument probably is when we go to 34 teams and only 16 make it. And every other pro league has expanded their postseason except for the NHL. For the traditionalists like you, I say a 7-10, 8-9 play-in round in no way negatively affects the perfection of the 16-team tournament. It's just, you know, you have to play a little bit more hockey if you finish 7th or 8th. And then after that, we get the pristine, perfect, best postseason in sports thing that we all love.
Well, it just feels like we're eventually going to get to a place in the National Hockey League where expansion continues. Like, we have the situation with Arizona potentially going to the Salt Lake City now, and there's rumors that, you know, eventually we'll have more teams in the mix. Like, that would be the avenue for expanding the postseason when there's just more teams here. Like, how do you feel about potentially expansion and then the move of Arizona to Salt Lake City? Like, I feel like this has been a long time coming, but it also happened very quickly. It's like Salt Lake was kind of like rumored, milled about, but then all of a sudden it's like, boom, this might actually be happening.
Well, the real interesting thing is with the speed with which this happened, I mean, a lot of that is obviously the situation on the ground in Phoenix, where the NHL didn't necessarily buy that this grandiose multi-use complex that Alex Morello wants to build was going to come to fruition, or was going to stay on the timeline that it's currently on, which is shovels in the ground in 2025, and then maybe it opens in 2027. That's if they win the land this summer, which is, again, not a guarantee. So a lot of that pushed them towards relocation. But it's also the NHL wanting to be in business with Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, and wanting to, you know, take advantage of that market that clearly has an owner with the money, has an arena that's ready, and they believe that it's going to be a pretty good market for the NHL. So to go back to your expansion question, I wonder what this means with regard to expansion, because I think a lot of us thought that they would see this Coyotes thing through and then they would expand to Salt Lake City and then either Houston or Atlanta. But now that they're going to be in Salt Lake City, like, they don't have to worry about rushing there now. They could take their time with these other expansion possibilities. And I do wonder if it is a signal that the timeline is a little bit longer than we expect with regard to the actual expansion to places like Houston and Atlanta.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I just, anything that puts a pin in expansion for a little bit is good for me. Because we have some interesting lineup decisions happening with, I don't know, a team like the Maple Leafs. But, you know, I don't want to know what lineups decisions are being made for the 13th forward on the Sharks.
But here's the thing, though. Like, you know, we started off the conversation talking about Austin Matthews and 70 goals.
Yep.
I mean, he's getting to 70 goals because the league is just a little bit more watered down, you know? And so if one of the after effects of expansion is we get 70 goal seasons, 100 assist seasons, and at least last season, the highest per team, per game average for goals since, I think, 93-94, let's go to 40 teams.
I really enjoyed this, but how dare you finish my work week denigrating Austin Matthews' 70 goal season? How dare you, Wyshynski? He's your beloved American.
I was saying it's, you know, it's the ground was no, the ground. Listen, he's not doing this in 96, right? No. Like, but he's certainly, the ground is fertile to do it now, and puck's still got to go in the net. And as we all know, you know, goals are more important than secondary assists. So he's doing well for himself.
Boy, are they. And apparently a team in Utah, at least as important as a team in Arizona. Thanks so much, Wyshynski. Always, always love it. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN.
You also said it was supposed to be calming. And then all of a sudden dropped that bomb at the end.
It's just like, oh, by the way, Austin Matthews' 70 goal season doesn't even count for anything. I did hate that he did that, because now I have to think about Ovechkin doing it in the 30-team league without Vegas and Seattle, and I'm now mad at him. How dare he tear down his own great American hope? I've been thinking about this a lot, the idea of Matthews, and if the Leafs have team success this year, how much it would move the needle for him. I mean, you can't move the needle here. you can, in the sense that, like, if they win, it does go to another stratosphere, obviously. But I do think that the idea of the, because it wouldn't just be like he won a Stanley Cup. It wouldn't just be that he won it for one of the most storied franchise. You would see the vignettes, and it, look, it wasn't 100 years. It's been 67. It's not 1908 or 1918. But you'd see the vignettes of, like, his favorite baseball player, David Ortiz, breaking the curse for the Red Sox, and you do the Cubs thing, and it's narratives, and that is what's going to sell in America. And the fact that if he was able to, and again, it's not going to happen, so let's just stop talking about it, but if heaven forbid, in a year where he gets 70 goals, the Leafs go on a run even to a cup final or something, I do think that can be a transcending kind of stepping stone moment for him in terms of his kind of consciousness for the North American sports fan as opposed to just the hockey fan.
Yeah, no, it would make me very weary of the next generation of American-born hockey players.
You don't need to wait. You can just be weary right now.
Yeah, they're that good. And then watching Austin Matthews do what he's doing this year, it's got to be inspiring American kids everywhere. Not just American kids, like Canadian kids, kids around the world. Like, if you're a fan of the National Hockey League, and you're seeing someone scoring 70 goals, like, you want to be like that dude. Yeah. Like, you want to be playing on the street and saying, oh, it's I got, you know, tie game, overtime. Mm-hmm. I'm Austin Matthews. And you score the winner, top shelf, just like he's done so 70 times this season. Like, this is a guy who is, you know, clearly a face of the league. And, yeah, I know you said you don't want to get ahead of yourself and thinking that the Leafs are going to go all the way, but I do think they're well suited and probably better suited than they've been in a very long time to go on a deeper run here. I like their chances.
Yeah, I've been on record to say that there's no way two good things are going to happen to the Leafs in a year. So it's like, if he hits 70 goals, I hope you enjoy that, kids, because you're not seeing the other thing. But if he doesn't, he probably still won't see it because it's the Leafs.
So then he sits the last starting on Saturday.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far. Right. I think they're actually might be a mutiny. Like, Guy Boucher might be coaching the team because Sheldon Keefe be in witness protection if they started sitting him tonight. Again, I think you've got to play him in at least the Tampa game if he doesn't get it this weekend. But please, please, please just find a way to get it at home Saturday night.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I should have looked this up. Either 50 or 60 came against the Wings last time. I can't remember which. I want to say it was 60. So wouldn't that be a nice piece of serendipity too? I mean, Bowen was hammering the narrative last night of he got 4 in his first game. Wouldn't it be amazing if he got 4 to get to 70? He did not. But
it was 60.
It was 60. Okay, so hey,
look at that memory.
We love a little. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is Sam McKee's line. Can't remember what I have for lunch, but I can remember that like it was yesterday.
Well, it's attention. It's what you're focused on. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, I'm certainly not worried about my lunch.
There you go.
I'm not worried about doing shows with you. Absolutely. Thanks, love buddy. It, Rubinoff. Always good getting you in. You'll be on tomorrow morning with Gentilly.
Yep.
I will be at a play date with my child before I abuse my couch watching the Masters tomorrow afternoon. And I'm going to do that this afternoon as well. It has been an absolute pleasure for my guys behind the glass, Santos and Azzaparty. It's been Gunning and Rubinoff from the Fan Morning Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.